Welcome to Rom Book Pod, Inclusively Yours, a new weekly podcast celebrating inclusive romance, one trope at a time. I'm your host, Sarah Jean, and today we conclude our September back-to-school theme with guests Amelia Agrafoho and Eric Jackson as we discuss the magical world of queer romance. Welcome to Rom Book Pod, Inclusively Yours. I'm your host, Sarah, and with me today are Amelia and Eric to talk about our theme of the month, education.
Hello.
Hello. This is Eric Jackson. Oh, am I allowed to say my last name?
Yes. You can try it again.
Is this the witness protection? Hi, this is Eric, and I am a high school teacher. I am in charge of my high school's GSA. I'm also a library trustee, so I am into the things that are queer and are educational, though I am a he, his, him, and
ally
person.
Yes. I am Amelia, she, hers, and I am a friend of Sarah's who has been reading romance for an ungodly number of years, specifically queer romance, I would say for over 20 years, hunting for the first ones that finally came out. I am a cis woman, is how I identify, and I am really excited to talk about books.
And I'm Sarah, your host. I've been reading queer romance for about 12 plus years now, starting out with MM and then branching out later once I started my queer book club. And today we're going to be talking about queer romances and books with romantic elements that center around education. Specifically, we're going to start with queer magic schools.
Woo!
Yeah. And how they can be a space for queer people to tell their stories. And we're going to start off that discussion with one of my favorite books of the year that literally breaks me in half. Well, not quite literally, but breaks my heart and puts it back together. In Other Lands by Sarah Reese Brennan, which is an up her YA novel from Small Beer Press that came out in 2017. And the reason I found this book after probably what I should have done was actually read the reviews of it and be like, oh, hey, why is this queer? Was a article from Tor talking about queering Hogwarts and talking about the history of queer magic schools post Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. So In Other Lands is about Elliot Schaefer, who is taken on a field trip and sees this wall, and not the other kids can't see this wall. So he's taken over the wall and joins a quasi-military academy in this magic land, and he's very displeased by being there, but he has nowhere else to go, so he decides to stay.
And it's the story of him coming to terms with who he is, and does he want to stay in this magical world and leave the real world behind with all of its problems? But the magical world has a whole slew of its own new problems, and he explores his queerness very differently in one world than the other, I think.
Because the Inner Lands is basically a deconstruction of children's portal fantasies similar to Narnia. And in this world, like, the elves have, like, not like necessarily reverse misogyny, but they have, like, the gender roles.
Reverse gender roles.
So, like, the female elves are more valued than the male elves, and the male elves are considered, like, the fair, weaker sex.
And
like,
there's
harpies
their purity.
And mermaids.
Yes.
And a purity-checking unicorn that Elliot is very displeased with. It's also a very murderous unicorn.
It's a murderous world.
And throughout the series, it's one very long book. Elliot.
Although I think it's written originally as a series of stories from online, and then was eventually.
She originally wrote them as a serial on her website and then collected them.
So it has that kind of serial feel to a lot of the
It book. Does, because it's split into age 13, 14, 15, mm-hmm. 16, 17. And then Elliot, his first relationship is with his elf friend Serene Heart in the chaos of battle.
Serene for short.
And with Serene, Elliot, he tries to help her understand how humans are different from elves and stuff, and with the gender dynamics and stuff like that, and learning about elven culture versus human culture, and their relationship ends kind of poorly, but they continue as friends.
It ends a little unsatisfactorily as a romantic relationship, but I think that one of the most mature things about Elliot at that point is that
they're only 14.
Yeah, he or maybe values 15. Yeah, 14 or 15. It's for a couple of years. He values their friendship over their potentially flawed romantic relationship.
Yeah, because they're only together, I think, in book terms for about 5 weeks. And then after that relationship,
was it really that short?
It was only 5 weeks.
Holy crap, wow.
At least according to the other short story. And then after that, when he goes back to the human world and he's still angry at everyone and angry at himself, he gets into a relationship with a 20-year-old man who he meets at the music store that he's been hanging out with. Mm-hmm. And that relationship isn't shown in a positive light because Jace wants to meld him and Elliot does not want to be melded into any shape or form. So that ends, and it's him exploring his queerness in that sense. So like when he doesn't come out to the others until I think they're leaving for the Harpies.
Which is fairly far on
into the book. He's come out to himself before this, mm-hmm. but not really to his friends. So Luke, our final love interest, and the one who he wants to eventually realize that he wants to be with, and he's wanted to be with really since the beginning.
Oh my God. I was waiting for them to kiss from the second they met. I'm like, all right, what
it's
is this?
It's interesting that Luke also, when he comments on that relationship, Elliot says something along the lines of, well, you know, we are an eternal love, and goes on to this whole thing that, you know, he and Serene, and Luke says something like, you're 14. Why would, that's weird. That doesn't happen in our world.
Yeah.
In our world, 14-year-olds don't meet and stay with each other forever, which is obviously one of those commentaries on the portal world.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And Elliot can be a little dramatic.
Elliot is the epitome of a caustic, angry bisexual who just wants to be loved. Because he was, in the terms of this world, and I'll put content warnings in the show notes for anyone who needs them, because there are a lot for this book. He was neglected as a child up until, and continuing after, when he goes home for the summer, his father doesn't care because when Elliot's mother left, his father's world just
fell apart.
It fell apart. Yeah. And so Elliot, the reason for his prickliness, the reason for his verbal causticness and
his self-doubt
and being in Elliot's head is an interesting thing because a lot of his thoughts mirror my own to a point that it's like, oh, okay. I didn't think of that this way. All right.
I remember this.
But it's a very interesting look on being a queer teenager because it's very open about the sexuality of the world, of the characters, and how frankness approaches teenagers having sex, and not in graphic detail either.
Yes. Yeah.
Just teenagers being teenagers and how that affects it. And there's no homophobia in the other lands.
It was very refreshing.
There's like a little bit in like the elves not believing that like two men could be together, but like two women was fine.
Right.
So that was a little bit like, huh.
Well, that was a mocking of the all of the queer laws outlawing gay couples from being together. But since lesbian couples or female couples were just so beyond what anyone even cared about. Who even cares what women are doing? We don't need to make laws because they're useless anyway.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a mockery.
Which I really like when Golden comes in and he's Serene's love interest and how that changes things. So I just really like how queer these books are and also how very polyamorous they are with Luke's family and how Luke himself doesn't want that but is fine with what his parents do and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's not an issue.
So also in the realms of magic land and magic fantasies, we also have the Nightrunner series by Lynn Fluelling, which is a much older series. It started in the 80s.
90s? Yeah, 90s. I think the first one was 94.
And then the last one was, I think, about 2008.
Right.
So the first two, both the characters in the series, Alec and Zergal, are bisexual. Wee. And they're the society of Scala is matriarchal. And the one downside probably to the series is we don't really get to see queer women as much.
Not in this series.
Not in this series. And even not in Bonedell's Twin. Not as really, much. We don't really get it.
I wish we did have more.
But
this was the first series that I encountered as a younger person, not a teenager because I'm old, that had a queer romantic element in it, and especially bisexual characters who, I mean, even now we know it's a challenge to find them. So when Sarah and I were talking about In Other Lands, to me, I had this immediate comparison with the character of Sarigal comparing to Elliot in the Knight Runner series, who is someone who is rejected by his family, someone who is incredibly smart and gifted and smart-mouthed, someone who is very young, and
well, young in terms of
in terms of his own people, and who it gets involved in a set of machinations of war and military and culture against culture that have a lot more range. I'm trying to think of the word effects that affect a lot more than just himself. And so these two characters really reminded me a lot of each other.
Because in the Knight Rider series, there is a lot of death. There's a lot of consequences for your actions, especially in terms of the Wizarding School that Alec and Sarigal are spies for.
Yes.
Whereas in Other Lands, Elliot is a student of the Council course. He doesn't want to go to war. He's trying to stop all the wars, which ends up him being on all the missions, so he sneaks onto half the missions anyways. Right. He's like, no, I'm going to stop this war because the people, like the captains of the war training course and the generals, they shouldn't be the ones writing the treaties, but because now they have the power, they're the ones writing the treaties.
Yeah.
Whereas in the Knight Runner books, it's very different, and there's much more consequences for the actions of Alec and Sarigal.
True. And there's a lot more focus on diplomacy as opposed to just war. So I thought that they kind of balanced each other really nicely there too. But the other thing I loved about them is that they both had areas where the queerness was very different in one culture versus another. Like in Other Lands, we have Elliot, who in our world has a very different experience of being a queer teen versus in the magical world, because there's very different cultures. And in the Knight Runner series, our one character, Alec, is from a very kind of traditional
they're the four gods, and the god is Dalna.
Yeah.
And he's all about procreation and the family, so there isn't a lot of discussion about.
It's kind of a little puritanical.
It is, but it's like, but the focus is on, we want to make you fertile, like, because he's a fertility god, and so that means anything that doesn't result in that, they just don't talk about it. They don't say it's bad, but they're sort of like, well, it isn't producing fertility. Yeah.
But
so
he also, Alec didn't grow, him and his father were isolated from everyone.
Yes, in addition to all that. Yeah.
So in addition to all that. So it's similar to Elliot and his father, but just a very different dynamic a little bit.
Yeah. And then when Alec comes to his, I mean, it's in the same world, but it could be another world almost, into this cosmopolitan, much more quote-unquote modern culture that celebrates the city of Rimini that has like the Street of Lights, where the brothels are, like, it depends on, you know, what type of companionship is just,
and each brothel has a different
set of lights, or a different color coded, and it's just, and but there's no hierarchy of one versus another being better. And not only is Alec like, wow, there's magic, wow, there are elves, wow, there are bisexual people. I mean, that was just as much of this illuminating factor that the sexuality was so different in the two cultures, which I liked a lot too.
And I will say, the audiobook for In Other Lands is also amazing. The audiobooks for the Knight Runner series have two different narrators.
Yeah.
The later narrator I found to be a bit better, or at least in the terms of actually pronouncing the names correctly.
I
just recently re-listened to the Knight Runner series because I was in the mood for something awesome. And I it's not the best But yeah, but it's good. It's definitely it's the third time I've listened to it, so it's definitely
it's a, more than in terms of other magic schools, one that is on my TBR is the Lord of Whitehall series by Jin Hale, which takes place at I think it's a magical college, and that comes out on audio in the fall. I look forward to reading that because I know it. The first ones are a bit older in terms of MM dynamics of MM romance, but it's still. I know Jin Hale writes a lot of queer magic related series.
It's well reviewed. Yeah, I'm waiting for the audiobooks too. Yeah. So. Yeah.
And it's all about like rooming in a same sex college.
Yeah.
So that's like a big. That's something that isn't explored very often.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, that it's hard to find same sex college experiences.
It is hard to find same sex college experiences outside of MM romance. I know there are a few YA series. Her Royal Highness by Rachel Hawkins is, I believe, an FF that takes place at a private school. But for me, because I went to an all-women's college, I haven't been able to find a book that relates in any way to my own experiences.
Well, here's to future success.
So that's been difficult because it's to be able to see yourself in education in books is an important experience.
Absolutely. No, there's most of my experience with students who are queer actually doesn't come from anything that I said at the beginning, because I forgot to mention that in addition to all those other things, I run my library's YA Dungeons and Dragons Club. And so where we do a lot of our fantasy exploration sort of
magic world
stuff that I get to talk to my students about is definitely in that Dungeons and Dragons role-playing experience where they get to try out all these different new identities. And it's really great to see my students who are queer and my students who are not queer and watch them sort of like, get together and realize that the types of stories that they need to tell need to broaden and become bigger, and yet still be full of drinking and having sex because they're teenagers and that's what they like to, that's the kind of game they like to, they kind of things they like to talk about, you know.
Yeah. And I think with magic schools, it allows for an exploration of queerness that sometimes gets bogged down by contemporary stories. Contemporary stories have power as well, but queer fantasy gives us that outlet for exploring gender identities. Mm-hmm. Like with Help Wanted and Offering of Plums by Jay Emery. In Help Wanted, which is an MF or M questioning, an eminent questioning character, it's two characters who go to magic school together, and then in dealing with gender identity and sexuality. And then in Offering of Plums, which is, I think it's still in the same universe, or at least universe adjacent, the character is attending a magic school and ends up almost sacrificed to a demon by their evil boyfriend, and then keeps going not back to the semester. Demon. And the demon is, I believe, non-binary.
Cool.
And I just, it was, they're very short, but they're very lovingly written in a way that, oh, we can explore magic like this and explore relationships like this, which is a very important aspect to romance, is to be able to explore beyond the cis heteronormativity and what is considered mainstream.
And we were actually all talking about this a little bit earlier, about what about the magic school as opposed to the in our world school, which we're going to talk a little bit about the benefits of the new college experience. What about the magic school makes it so easy to bring queerness into it and to explore queerness in it? And we were talking a little bit about, and I just wanted to ask you guys to talk a little bit about that as well, that that you're already, you have a situation of a school which most people have experience with. So you have kind of a baseline structure that people are comfortable with, but you're already basically queering it in one sense by changing the laws of the world. You're changing the magic laws. You're changing the social structure. You're changing, what people
You're creating your own world.
Right.
And fantasy should not be limited by colonial structures and heteronormative structures.
Yes. And if anyone brings historical realism as into a fantasy world, just kick them. I know we're not supposed to be mean and hate people, but I'm going to kick those people because you know, we've all heard these people where you have this wonderful fantasy. It's either a school fantasy or an adventure fantasy, and you have people behaving in ways that so many of us want to see available, and then you have the historical crap police come along and say, well, you know, that's not historically accurate.
Queer people, people of color, people of disability have been here forever. There's one story I actually recently read that's less magic school and more school that's haunted. So I read a paranormal historical romance called Light Among Shadows by Kelly York and Rowan Altwood. And it's a boys' boarding school for wayward teenage boys to go to this last resort, I guess. And the school is haunted by ghosts of previous students. And one of the students, his friend goes missing, and he's trying to figure out why. And he keeps encountering these very... they're not specters, they're more like zombies. And trying to figure out what is going on, what is the secret of the school. And it's actually a kind of terrifying secret. But the main romance I enjoyed, and it wasn't a perfect book, but it was fun in that it was more like almost gothic in how it was going.
Yeah.
But I enjoy because it's then a space, and there was a bit of like they had to hide because it's a historical romance that they had to hide, otherwise they could get expelled. But other than that, it was very refreshing. There's also a couple other...
well, that could seg us directly into the Shauna Maguire.
Yeah.
Yeah, if we're talking queer gothic school books with portal fantasies and magical worlds.
And queer people up the wazoo.
Every queer person that you possibly want. Every Heart of Doorway.
Every Heart of Doorway by Shauna Maguire. Each child has their own portal that they've gone through and either has been accepted by that portal or rejected by that portal. And it's a very interesting look into the doorways of what doorway is accepting and what doorway isn't.
And all of these kids go to a magical world, but they end up back in our world. And they are so traumatized. Many of them have been in these other magical worlds for years. And like Sarah said, some of them are good places to be. Some of them are not good places to be. Some of them, they wanted to come back to our world desperately, but are still not fitting in with their families anymore. Others would do anything to get back to their portal world. And we have this school, this quote unquote magical school, where all of these kids are collected because they're kind of a danger to themselves and everyone else, because people think that they're either lying or that they're mad because they're talking about these places that they've been lost in for so many years. And so they all come together here. And this particular book is a murder mystery book. There are
romantic elements to it. The main couple, the girl is asexual and the boy is trans.
Yes. And it's, again, there's another great look at taking portal fantasies and turning them on their heads and turning some of the tropes around, because some of these kids were really happy in our world and were tremendously traumatized in the portal fantasies, because not every portal fantasy is a place where things make sense, and not every portal fantasy
was
is
one of them, like the underworld, where like
she was in the underworld. Our main character was in the underworld. Some of them are in places that are so chaotic that, you know, none of the physical laws of the universe make sense. Some of them are, these kids were hunted. Some of them, these kids were scientists. Some of them, they had power. Some of them, they were enslaved. So they're all coming from all these different places. And you see how, one, how actually little their queerness mattered in those places, which is kind of refreshing, because it wasn't a huge deal.
But they were accepted in those places. Yeah, versus the other portals where they weren't accepted. And now when they're back at the school,
everyone is accepted. Because everyone is so... There's so many variables, that's only one axis of that,
you know, with all, and it's maybe even, it appears, because of these different worlds and literally different realities, it's minor compared to some of the, like, okay, so you're queer, that's great, do you use gravity? You know, that's where we're at.
In some worlds it's important, and in others it's completely negligible. It doesn't have anything to do with what they're doing.
So one of the other aspects that's important to queer romances is college romances.
Woo!
In that college can or cannot be, depending on your experience, a very freeing place where you can come out, you can be free, you're away from home, you're away from your parents, you're away from those who might do you harm or control your life otherwise, where you can come out and have that space.
And you're away from yourself, because you've built a persona your whole life. And in some people's cases, it's who they've wanted to be their whole lives. In other people's cases, it's who they've had to be, either to protect themselves or to make it just easier on themselves when they have other things going on. Or they didn't know until they got to college that they really were someone else, because they weren't exposed to different things.
For me, because I went to a women's college, and even though my high school had a GSA and I had that space and I had friends who were out, I didn't have the words. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have the words for demisexual or pansexual or bisexual or whatever amalgam my brain has decided that I am this year. And it wasn't until I was literally sitting on the dorm room floor of a friend, and it happened to be National Coming Out Day, and she was like, oh, by the way, I'm pansexual, panromantic. And I was just like, oh.
Yeah.
So college romances can be incredibly important to that experience. One of the ones I really like is Love Lessons by Heidi Cullinan, which I've reread quite a bit. The other two in the series don't stand up for me as much. In terms of,
I agree. They have some
aspects that work, but other aspects that are a bit too problematic at this. They're not that old, but they didn't age as well when I reread them for me. But the first one,
I agree. The first one is almost a perfect book.
The first one, it's Walter and Kelly, and Walter is a third year who has come back to college again after taking a year off because of family dynamic and issues at home, and he was trying to live off campus,
and it didn't work.
So now he is sharing a single
with a freshman,
and Kelly has a lot of different allergies.
Yes, severe life-threatening allergies.
Severe allergies, and I like how the book handled his allergies and Walter being agreeable to everything and trying to make sure that he didn't do something to set off the allergies, but also the dynamic of the relationship, in that Walter is also technically a very abused,
neglected
child,
yes,
or teenager at this point. He's 20, he's like 23 at the start of Love Lessons.
22, I think. Yeah. He's like 3 or 4 years older than Kelly.
Yeah, because Kelly is 18 or 19, and Walter has his own issues with relationships and how his parents neglected him and let him have, honestly, run loose, but like didn't particularly care what he did because they weren't involved. They're very wealthy, and Kelly's family isn't very wealthy. They're very middle-class Minnesotans from the middle of nowhere, and Kelly he wanted to get away. He wanted to go as far away as possible so he could come out.
Yes.
And there's a point when it's orientation, and his orientation leader kind of, like, forcibly outs him, and Kelly was not ready for that.
Yeah.
So, and it was how that over-eagerness can also result in, I mean, nothing bad comes from it, but it's more
luckily
just a deep discomfort of I was not ready for that. I also really liked the inclusion of Rose in these books, because Walter and Kelly are both friends with Rose, but they both have that queer gal pal.
Yeah.
Queer gal pal friend.
Someday she's supposed to get her own book.
Someday.
At some point.
Hopefully.
Yeah. One of the things, like you were saying, Sarah, that I loved about this book is that, again, the reinventing yourself at college, and with Kelly's character, and there's this great flip-flop about halfway through the book. Kelly comes in as this very sweet, very innocent, very inexperienced baby gay who just wants to experience the world. And in his background, yes, he's got the chronic disease kind of background of severe life-threatening allergies. He has a supportive family, though. The reason he didn't come out was his illness, his small town, his parents were having job issues, his younger sister has illness issues. There was just a lot going on. Yeah, she was a juvenile diabetic.
Okay.
Which is just, they talk about having two kids in the household with a lot of health concerns in a family that doesn't have a lot of money. And he had this very specific role in his hometown that he was good at. He was an overachieving, you know, really great straight kid. And to kind of confront that would to throw a monkey wrench in the narrative that he just didn't have the energy and time for. He knew he was waiting to get to college.
And he hasn't decided what he wants to do either.
Yeah.
Which is very refreshing, because sometimes you have that I'm going to do this. This is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. And Kelly doesn't know what he wants to do.
A lot of people don't.
That's a fairly, yeah, that's a pretty common thing. If you talk to most high school students, they are very much like, if you say, I teach science classes. And so if you talk to them like, oh, so do you want to be a doctor? And like, I don't know. You know, like that. And I don't know is the most common answer. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that, that we talk about this, when we talked about this earlier, we talked about students getting to go to school and then, so that's the thing that you're supposed to do. That's
get to college.
Yeah. If you went, your parents want you to go to college, and then you get to college, you've checked that box, and then all of a sudden it's like, well, the next part is, you know, get a job and start a life. And but they're like, well, what do I want to do? Why, you know, they sort of arrive at school and they're like, I've made it. And then there's not that driving force anymore. And in that moment of changing momentums is when it's really good to analyze what sort of level of, you know, where you want
to
be.
I was sent to college with my major predetermined by my parents, and I didn't have the brain space to be like, no, I don't want to do this. I want to go here and do this, because of other family issues at home that it wasn't quite literally until my last semester, after everything imploded, that I was like, no, I don't want to continue with this.
That's okay. You took until graduate school.
Yeah, I was one of those kids who's like, I'm going to be a scientist. Yes, I'm 8, but I still am. And went all through school, graduated in like undergrad in 3 years, went to start my PhD and absolutely fucking hated it. So I was one of those kids who missed that space, that college environment that Eric is talking about, where you stop and pause. And that I do remember having that pause, but ignoring it. So that's one of the places where, okay, now what am I going to do? Who am I? That who am I space gives you a chance to decide on romantic and sexuality issues, as well as when you're like, okay, there's a whole group of people who don't know me that I could date if I wanted to. How do I can I reinvent myself? Do I want to be the same person that I was? Do I not want to be the same person that I was? And Kelly does not. In the Love Lessons book, he wants to come out on his own terms, yes. But he definitely, that's one of the things that he was looking forward to college, is being out as gay. While Walter, our other character, has been out for forever.
He's very comfortable in the sexuality.
Yeah.
Walter is also very much a disaster thought, but gay. Yeah. And that's also like one of the reasons why I like him, because he thinks the worst is going to happen because the worst has happened to him.
Multiple times.
Yes.
And that's where our flip happens halfway through this book, because we start out with our innocent, sweet Kelly and our experienced, worldly Walter.
And then Walter doesn't know what to do anymore because he's actually in love with Kelly now.
Absolutely. And we look at their backgrounds, and suddenly Kelly's this person with a really strong family background and this tremendous pair of parents who really taught him how to be an emotionally strong person with someone else. While Walter is great at fucking around, but he doesn't have this whole background of strength to do it, so that dynamic switches.
It's also interesting in that book, because we have a department, we have the communications department, which is what Walter's major is, and it's not one that's supported by the university they're at.
Yeah.
So they have to deal with the fallout of his major being cut, and what does Walter do now?
Yes.
Like it's another
thing that's failed him.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
So what does he do? Because tuition's also being raised and Kelly has to leave because this is a very expensive private university. So it's them figuring out what to do next.
And how to do it together.
Now, on the opposite side of this, you were talking about Shut Your Face, Anthony Pace.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Which is...
So can I talk about this one?
Yes.
So this is a book that is not very well known. It's by... Claire Davis and Al Stewart, which is nice to have. It's a pair of writers. They actually write a lot of YA books that are set in schools. But this is my favorite one. And this involves two best friends, Charlie and Anthony, who have grown up together. They hated each other. I think it was in kindergarten.
Yeah.
And from that, this is our enemies at 5 to lovers at 19. It's a very long journey. It starts in the present, and they're going off to college, but they are living at home, so they're not really able to take that break. It's also set in England.
And they don't want to, though.
They don't want to. And this is very different for me from that general leave for college, reinvent yourself. They're in this situation where they want to hold on to themselves because they're so important to each other. They want to hold on to their bond and try and keep that where everything is new and different in college. And Anthony comes from a family that is very close. They're very supportive. His older sister became pregnant as a teenager, lives at home, and is going to medical school. And only through the amazing support of these great parents are like, yeah, have that kid, go to medical school. They did not in any way think that that was going to slow her down. They just helped her through that, which was outstanding. While Charlie lives with his mom, who is an older mother, who is suffering from Alzheimer's, and the dementia aspect is getting more and more serious, and he's trying to hide it from his best friend with this loving, supportive family, and he has no one else. So they're trying to keep this friendship together and keep their old relationship together in a completely new environment. And it just can't happen. Life will change. Everything changes. Their relationship finally changes into something romantic, which is so ridiculously sweet. The other thing I love about this, the set of writers, is they write about weird characters and not characters that are, oh, look, they're just a little bit off. No. Charlie is partially diagnosed as being on the autism spectrum. Anthony is just a very, very unusual thinker. He's a poet. He's hyperactive. I would say that he has aspects of ADHD to his personality. They're very strongly shown but not told, and having them hold on to themselves in an environment that's completely changing is an interesting focus for me. And it's one of the sweetest books I've ever
read. It's a really great book.
College is a very stressful time.
Yeah.
Or at least for me, it was a very stressful time.
It's a very stressful time for everyone. And it is that point of transition, you know, and it really, our society very often marks it as the moment when you become an adult, because I have students who are 18 in my class and some of my classes as seniors, and yet they still need their parents for permission slip forms and that sort of thing. Whereas in 3 months,
they don't need anything.
They need nothing. And right. Why is it those 3 months? Why is it? So that moment of graduation and moving on.
For me, when I was at college, most of my friends were freshmen, sophomores, juniors. But then because there were a lot of women and other identifying folks who were going back to college later, because we had the Saturday program, which was like 6 to 8 hours each Saturday for like 7 weeks for like a couple classes. Mm-hmm. So I had friends who were married and in their mid to upper 20s and early 30s who were coming back
to college,
and friends who transferred from other places or had taken a year off. And it was just very interesting when it's not everyone in your friend group and most of my friend group, even though it's labeled a women's college, most of my friend group now is ace, bi, pan, and otherwise trans or gender fluid. Mm-hmm. And it was just very interesting to see how that dynamic and people explore themselves at a college like that when the administration doesn't necessarily
acknowledge. Yeah, that is very true, because it's changed a bit since then, that I think some schools are a little bit more accepting of
People having different patterns in which they progress.
True.
To move forward. Absolutely.
And that's one of the books that I wanted to talk about a little bit, my Jericho Candelario book. But I think that in between, there's a couple other books that you wanted to bring up that have that kind of college dynamic that you had on.
Was it The Science of Loves or The Bell versus the BDOC?
Oh, we could talk about any of them.
Yeah. I've read The Bell versus the BDOC. Well, let's talk, that's what I want to talk about.
I've read the rest of, I've read the last three of the off-campus series. I didn't finish one, I didn't read three, and I didn't read the one in Paris.
Okay. So you don't read a lot. So
I've read the ones that are with the crewing team, and then I read The Girl Next Door. I haven't read The Bell versus the BDOC yet, which is on my TBR, but...
Well, this is the Bender Break series by Amy Jo Cousins, and mostly takes place in a fictitious but based on many schools in Massachusetts.
It's based on Mount Holyoke. The campus is based on Mount Holyoke, and it's set somewhere in Western Mass.
Yes.
Which I've made a map as to where I think it actually takes place. Where it could possibly be. That'd be close enough. To
I have this image.
River.
I have this image of your bedroom, and there'd be like there's strings attached and tacks and like
it's gotta be here.
It's gotta be here somewhere.
They went to the Regatta, and then they the head of the Charles. They were there.
Well, in the first book, he's going to Boston every weekend cab driving.
Right. So he has to be within driving distance.
That doesn't make sense.
Well,
because you're driving 2 hours from Holyoke or Northampton in that area. Yeah.
That's why I think it's more central. I think you need to move it really to central.
Well, no, she said she has it somewhere out in Western Mass.
Yeah, Western.
But anyways, so specifically with The Bell versus the BDOC, which is the novella point two.
It's this takes place at this fictional college, but it is many years before the contemporary series begins. It's set in the early to mid 90s.
So it's technically a contemporary historical, I guess.
It's a nostalgic. That's, I think, the period that they, if it's not historical, but it's not quite contemporary, we're calling those within the last 50 years, I think they're still calling them nostalgia pieces. And I like that word, so because that kind of gives us a reference range of. There are people who are, still alive who went through these experiences relatively recently. And having been a person who was in college in the 90s, I was like, oh, yeah, that really, the no cell phones, yeah. Laptops weigh 17 pounds, yeah, that's exactly how it felt. But what I love about this is it is a female-female relationship, and it is a short, sweet, I think it's one of the most perfect novellas that I've ever read. And our main character, our point of view character, is a Southern belle named Shelby, who is all about your big 90s curls and your mini dresses and heels, and she is femme, femme, femme. Yeah, her fingernails are short. However, they're painted cotton candy pink. And she... as she describes it, is a lesbian's lesbian. She has no interest in men. She has never had interest in men. She has had multiple relationships with women. She gets to school. She gets to this wonderful northern school where she really just wants to start her life and start dating women on campus. And there's this beautiful girl, this beautiful woman named Florence, who is, I think she's Korean-American. She dresses in velvet suits. She's very masculine presenting and super hot. And our girl Shelby's like, I am going to stun this woman off her feet. And so she makes all these plans to hang out at the bar where she's going to be. And she shows up where there's a trivia night like every Wednesday. And she shows up and a friend of hers is drunk and sad because his girlfriend broke up with him. And he comes on to her and is all over her. And she's trying to be kind to him because she likes him and knows that he's being an idiot for a specific reason that,
it's not his fault. Yeah.
No, and he's not assaulting or anything. He's just being handsy and stupid and sad and drunk. And she's just trying to handle him. And of course, that's when our love interest sees her with this guy's arms all over her and immediately dismisses her as having absolutely no credibility as a queer person.
Which is also incredibly biphobic.
But afterwards, our main character tells her, no, I am queer. I am not interested in men. And this character and all of her friends and pretty much the whole campus queer environment says, no, we don't believe you because you are so feminine appearing.
And which is a problem that happens in the queer community.
Which is a problem that happens. And obviously, yes, and very much so. Being someone who likes to dress at different ends of our masculine and feminine spectrum, I can really attest to that. And our character is smart and very sure of herself, and she's like, you know what? Fuck you, people. I am going to show you how amazing I am. So she puts together this team of trivia people that kicks ass.
It's a crack squad.
Oh, my God. And then she just shows everybody up, and she is playing the assassin game on campus, and she's like, I'm going to get this other woman's name, and I'm going to be her assassin, and I'm going to kill her, and she is going to have to admit how amazing I am. And they keep coming in contact with each other, and our other character finally realizes how really insensitive and wrong and harmful she's being by not taking this woman at her word because of how she looks. And it's one of the few books that I remember seeing that addressed that particular situation where you're not believed to be who you are. And that happens so often. So I really like it. And it's snarky and it's fun, and there's a lot of sarcasm, yeah, and there's a lot of great sex. So it's one of my favorites.
One of the other books I wanted to talk about, we have about 15 minutes left.
Okay, cool. Yep. There's so many books.
There's so many books. It's so many queer books now, and it's yeah, almost impossible to talk about them all.
So trying to talk about some of the earlier ones, some of the middle ones, some of the recent ones.
So one of the recent ones I read that came out this year is I Wish You All the Best by Mason Deaver, which is a YA novel about a non-binary teenager named Ben, who they come out to their parents, and their parents kick them out in the middle of winter. They don't really know what to do, but they call their estranged sister, who they haven't spoken to in about 10 years. Mm-hmm. And their sister takes them in, and their sister's husband is a teacher at a school. Mm-hmm. So he tries to help Ben get into the setting up the paperwork and stuff like that so they can go
get
to the new school. But Ben makes the decision that he doesn't want to be out as non-binary at this new school, which results in, for a lot of the book, them being misgendered by their teachers, friends, and the love interest. Because they don't want to come out.
Right. They present as male.
Which makes them incredibly uncomfortable. Their sister tries to help. Mm-hmm. So, like, they'll go shopping, and Ben will look at some of the really pretty dresses. So, and it's also a very interesting look in, because they go to therapy to deal with what happened with their parents. Mm-hmm. And it's also the relationship that develops with Nathan. And I really like how the relationship develops and how Ben tries to come out as... It's a very powerful book about being a non-binary teenager in a school setting when you don't have the power to come out, when you're trying to navigate yourself in the world, and also dealing with past trauma. And I like how they deal with the past trauma, and also how the relationship and how accepting Nathan is when they get there.
And I haven't read this book, but when you told me about it, I immediately said to Eric, this is a book that you really need to have accessible for your GSA kids.
Yeah.
Because you were talking about...
Oh, I've had students who've been in those
exact
same situation where they've gone to school and they've taken the advantage of that chance to sort of examine themselves and move forward. And some of them have transitioned. And when that's happened, their parents have cut them off. They've had no place to live. They've had to figure out tuition. Like that's happened. I've been in contact with those students and tried to help them when mm-hmm. possible. And,
yeah. Yeah. And you've also had students who were trans in class, but said that it's just too much effort to go through all that.
Yeah, it's
when they're leaving soon.
Yeah, it's one of the things we really like about.
And you said with the 6 months
that's the end of their senior year.
Yeah,
so they have 6 months, and then Ben has to figure out what are they going to do for college? Yeah. What do they want to do? They don't really know. They're a great artist.
Yeah, this is challenging because they're using different pronouns.
They identify with they/them pronouns, but because they get misgendered throughout the book by other people, their sister tries very hard.
But they ask other people to misgender them.
Is a very difficult decision. But they still identify with they/them pronouns and non-binary. Okay.
I was asked to do that through the GSA because the GSA is a safe space. In that safe space, that person gave me their new name and their pronouns, and then asked me if I were to ever interact with their parents to use their dead name and their dead pronouns because that was safest. And so since it was a question of safety, it wasn't hard to decide, but I definitely
And Ben is safe. Ben is safe at their new school until their parents show up to have a hissy fit at their art show. And I think this is a very important book for non-binary teens. And the author is also non-binary.
Awesome.
And they're from the South. So it's a very important book and one that the aspects of therapy and going to therapy to deal with your trauma is what I identified with this book. Are there any other books we wanted to quickly touch base on before we wrap up?
I just wanted to jump back to the fantasy because we didn't get a chance to mention an old school YA series, the Circle Opens universe by Tamora Pierce. It's a YA novel. It's a YA world. It's a set of four novels. It involves queer characters, including at the school we have the two main teachers who are both female and are in a relationship, and that is just considered completely normal.
And they're some of the most powerful people.
And some of the most powerful people in the magical world.
Which is awesome.
And their students. There is one of the students is canonically is in a female relationship
and has her own queer books
and
later
has
on.
Her own book later on, and I still maintain that one of the characters is also ace, although that is not canonical. The Circle Opens books by Tamora Pierce really has some really great representation, and if you have younger people who might want to see themselves, I just wanted to make sure that was mentioned.
What about you, Amelia?
Well, I had a couple other books in the college arena that I wanted to bring up. Two particular, they're linked books. You can read them separately, but why would you want to?
They're also on audio.
They're also on audio, and they're fantastic. They're by J.A. Rock and Lisa Henry. And the first one is called Mark Cooper versus America. The second one is Brandon Mills versus the V-Card. And what I love about them is the first one with Mark Cooper. Mark is a college freshman. He is originally from Australia. His mother remarried and settled in the States, and he is kind of really out of sorts. He's out of place. He is in a new place, but not where he thought he was going to be. So everything is kind of surly and snarky and bratty and up in the air for him. And he is very, very, very out as a gay young man, but it also develops the aspect of his personality as developing his identity in the kink community as well as a very young person. And I loved this because it was super positive. The guy he ends up dating is amazingly supportive of Mark, even when he's a twit. And it really, because, you know, people in the kink communities don't just like, you know, appear one day at age, you know, 27. There's a growth process and a discovery process, and this very much goes through that discovery process of what he likes and why he thinks he likes it and how it's, you know, very much a natural and healthy part of his personality. And then the second book is Brandon Mills versus the V-Card, and our main character Brandon is a survivor of sexual abuse, and it's one of these situations where he absolutely wants to make a complete break from his old school and his old personality, because everyone knew him as that kid who was sexually abused by a teacher. And he's going to college and he is going to completely start over. But he learns that you really just can't leave everything behind. And you need to have people who understand that and support who you are and not who you just want to reinvent yourself to be, because you're still you, even in a new place.
Yeah.
And he meets a very delightful, nerdy kid who loves dinosaurs, and I just love him so much. And
there's several queer romances that involve people who love dinosaurs.
Yes, yeah. Dinosaur. We are claiming dinosaurs. Dinosaurs are now queer. No one else can have them. I'm sorry, Eric. You can't have them. Lemon bars are bi. Dinosaurs are queer, and that's just, you can borrow them. You can have
them. I'm allowed to access them,
access
just
them.
So I acknowledge that they are within your sphere. That's fine.
They're ours now.
I believe I just want to throw this in because I think you'll kick yourself. Did you mention the hockey, the Czech?
Oh, yes. We feel completely remiss in terms of queer graphic novels and romances. The comic Czech Please by Ngozi, which is the most refreshing experience of a queer hockey college romance I've seen in a very long time.
With baking,
we have Eric Biddle, who's closeted at home and he wants to be out at college, but he doesn't quite know how, and no, he lives in the dorms to start with because he's a freshman. And when he lives in the Haas with the rest of the hockey team, and he's very femme, and very strong, and he's just a fantastic character, but he wants to bake all these pies. He stress bakes.
Yes.
And then delightful. We have the captain of the hockey team. I can't remember his name now.
I can't.
The captain of the hockey team.
Our love interest, Jack.
We have the captain of the hockey team, who is the son of, like, this renowned Canadian hockey star. He basically broke down because of the pressure. And I just like how the relationship develops over the course of 3 years.
Yes. I also love the sidekick. That's a great book for allies, because we've got the hockey manager is an amazing support for Biddy and for Jack. And then we have the character of Shitty, who, do we ever actually learn his name? I don't think we actually learn his name. He's just Shitty, and that's his name.
And I like how, at least in the recent panels that have come up for year 4, how Eric's father doesn't... They come out to his parents by kissing on Kiss Cam in front of live TV.
Yep. Oops.
Or not in Kiss Cam, but they just come out that way.
On the hockey cam.
Yeah. And Eric's father doesn't really know how to relate
to that. He's not handling it.
So he keeps, like, referring to Jack as Eric's friend and stuff like that, and being like, let's go do these manly things when he comes to visit. Yeah. And it's just... he's trying, but it ends up hurting Eric. Mm-hmm. And I haven't read the ones past that because I'm behind, but I like what Ngozi does with this series and how impactful it is. The other comic I really wanted to briefly touch on was Rockin' Riot. It's a webcomic series that is complete. It takes place in the 50s, and it's not quite Grease-style gangs. But it's like those 50s, there's the boys gang, there's the girls gang, but they're all very queer gangs. Like, cool. There's...
is there music?
I don't remember if there's music. But there's trans boys in the boys gang, trans girls in the girls gang. Everyone's accepting
of it. Where do the non-binary people go?
Do they have their own gang?
I don't remember if the non-binary people have their own gang or where they ended up. I don't remember... in terms of historical romances, and there's different pairings in the series and romantic elements, and it's just a fun because it's the reclamation of, yes, we were here in the 50s, even though the 50s kind of sucked for us, but it's just a very fun look at, like, queer teenage gangs.
Yeah. Can I just throw in two more?
Yeah.
Okay, so the Backstagers.
Yes.
And the Lumberjanes. From Boom Studios. The Lumberjanes technically had a camp, so it's not a school.
But
there's magic. It's definitely magic. And then the Backstagers is also magic because it is that magical theater place. This is for every theater geek
I was a theater kid.
For every theater kid who believed that, like, where did the stage crew get all that stuff? How did they do that? It was amazing. This talks about the magic, the literal magic.
The magic land of theater.
Yeah. So both of those are great. I just want to throw those in this recommendation. And they're definitely queer and definitely fun.
They are definitely
magic. Magic, queer, fun.
Magic, queer, fun. Perfect triad. The last one I wanted to mention briefly is the Signs of Love series by Anita Sunday.
Yeah, we can close with that one because it's really...
The first one is the one I identify with because the main character is the epitome of the oblivious bisexual who doesn't realize he's bisexual.
And what's the name of that one?
That's Leo Loves Aries.
Leo Loves Aries.
It's the epitome of, I'm the oblivious disaster bisexual, I don't know what to do. Oh no, I'm falling for my roommate. Housemate, because he's a roommate in the house that they share with his sister. And it's just, his progression to figuring out he's bi is one of the most hilarious and fun journeys I've seen, because it's very, you can easily identify with him, because sometimes, like, yes, we're just very good friends with Mr. Jamie Cooper. Nothing to see here. Just good friends. Just good housemates. We're good.
And wait, like, I want to kiss
him. Wait, I want to really kiss him. Oh, no. Oh, dear. What? Oh, I want to kiss him now a lot.
I remember that moment. College, yes. Duds Ball.
Oh, yeah.
Theater.
Yeah.
Theater is a great place. Yeah.
It's another one of those fun places where reality is suspended.
Yeah.
So college romances and magic romances and just being
It allows for queer people to have a space to grow, to have a space to change and empower people.
Yes. Because it's unrestricted.
Because but still it's, safe.
But still safe.
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
as safe as you can.
As safe as you can be. Yeah. And it gives a person the power to write a universe and write a college how they want it to be, mm-hmm. and how they want to be as a person.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Ursula Le Guin said that the whole point of fantasy is to imagine the world in the way that you would like it to be, that you could, that, you know, that manifest, that the idea that, you know, once the divine right of kings was considered the reality, and then we changed that. And, you know, and we changed it first by writing about things and telling stories that didn't exist there. And yeah. So this is the chance now. And heteronormity is the norm. And why would you, that will never change. It's, you know.
Queer people have the power to tell our own stories and the space to tell our own stories.
And
when given the chance to change narrative fiction, and we kick ass at it.
Absolutely.
Woo-hoo!
Yep.
So.
It's my official ally, woohoo.
Anyways, so thank you for joining us today on Rom Book Pod's education theme. This is your host, Sarah, signing off. You can find me on Twitter at Queer Reader, where I continue to yell about more queer books and
the need for queer books.
And for books that allow people to see themselves in. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Amelia and Eric, for joining me today.
Oh, this was so much fun.
Yeah, it was a blast.
Thank you for letting me talk about books for an hour.
Yeah. Like, that was really hard.
Yeah.
All right.
Signing off.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Rom Book Pod, Inclusively Yours, a new weekly podcast celebrating inclusive romance, one trope at a time. If you'd like weekly recommendations for inclusive romance, please take a moment to subscribe. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest at RomBookPod. That's RomBookPod. Thank you for joining us, and until next time, happy reading.